This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Leibel Sternbach is here, Joe McKenzie, and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Joining us now on New Beginnings as we begin our program is Dr. Michael Osterholm, no stranger to our New Beginnings listeners. He has served presidents of the United States, and he is the world's foremost expert on all things coronavirus. Today, I welcome Dr. Michael Osterholm, and we've been hearing a lot about a new subvariant called EG5, and I'm wondering where you believe that we stand right now with regard to COVID-19.
I think we really have to take a step back and look at the variant picture as a whole. I think the past several months has almost felt like we're dealing with one big mixing pot of variant soup. And to many, including myself sometimes, it can all get pretty confusing and start blending together. So maybe I'll just start out with the general lay of the land. And so it's important to remember that when we're talking about these latest subvariants, we're actually talking about different offshoots of Omicron, which has been the overall variant family we've been dealing with since the late 2021 time period when it first arrived on the scene. And of course, when Omicron did first emerge, we faced a series of recurring waves linked to initial subvariants such as BA1 and BA2, BA4 and BA5, and in the US, BA2.12.1. In fact, those latter subvariants were actually tied to somewhat of a summer surge we dealt with in this country last summer. But since then, for the most part, we haven't exactly had a situation where another Omicron offshoot took off and resulted in a wave of activity. If you look, basically starting in January of this year, there's been one branch of the Omicron family known as XBB that's circulated around the world. And without getting into the weeds too much, XBB is a recombinant form of the virus that was formed when two distinct Omicron subvariants were joined together in a host and ended up exchanging certain genetic information, which ultimately created this recombinant version. To add some context, in the world of different viruses, including coronaviruses, it's not uncommon to see that happen. However, a key point with this is that the increase in XBB prevalence actually coincided with a decrease in COVID activity. Important to emphasize, a decrease. In fact, that's what we've experienced in the U.S. starting sometime this past January and lasting all the way up until about June, when we started seeing activity creep up again. Now, with that being said, I just want to state up front, I'm personally not convinced that the uptick we've seen here in the U.S. is a direct result of a specific new variant. I don't think the data I've seen really supports that. So I just want to make that clear. Against the backdrop of this latest uptick, we've actually seen certain descendants of the XBB subvariant increase in prevalence. And the one that's made the most sizable gain so far, both in the US and abroad, is again known as EG.5. Here in the US, EG.5 now accounts for around 17% of cases, which actually makes it the most prevalent subvariant we're seeing. And if you look back, you can see that its frequency grew over time. For example, back in early June, roughly 2 months ago, less than 4% of the U.S. cases were EG.5. By early July, it grew to around 8% of cases. A couple of weeks later, it was at 12%. And now, of course, as I noted, it's at 17%. So clearly, it has some growth advantage over those circulating variants. So from what we've seen, it's gaining ground. With that question becomes why? Well, with EG.5, it appears that most of the advantage is derived from a mutation it has on the spike protein known as 456L. Studies have found that with this mutation, the virus does a better job of evading immune protection. On that note, it's not just EG.5 that some of the experts in this area are concerned about. In fact, there are other versions of the virus picking up the same mutation, which suggests it's one that confers a clear advantage. As my dear friend and colleague Eric Topol put in his latest piece on Substack, the virus is learning new tricks. So in the weeks and months ahead, I think it's clear we're going to see subvariants like EG.5 and possibly some other offshoots grow in prevalence. However, what remains to be seen is whether that growth will actually trigger an increase in activity, and that's more challenging to predict. It's of note that just yesterday, the World Health Organization issued an assessment of EG.5, and they concluded, based on the available evidence to date, the public health risk posed by EG.5 is evaluated as low at the global level. This particular summary is consistent with exactly what I just shared with you, has been our conclusion as to what's happening with the EG.5 variant.
So where are we?
Well, overall, I think it's another one of those wait-and-see moments. Obviously, when it comes to the topic of variants, it's challenging enough to understand exactly what's happening as is. But with less testing and fewer resources for sequencing, I think it's only becoming more and more challenging as of late. And one potential silver lining with the rise of an EG.5 is that the updated monovalent booster that'll be rolling out in the U.S. targets the spike protein of XBB, which is a close match to EG.5. I don't see any evidence of a variant or subvariant combination right now that is truly going to bring us a surge in cases. But I think at this point, this is still good news relative to what we've been through in the past 3 years.
Thank you, Doctor. That's Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist, and you're listening to New Beginnings. Hi again, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. And now we have an opportunity to turn our attention to Mr. John Schwartz. He is the founder and the president of the Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse. And John, can you reacquaint our audience with why you set up the center in the first place?
Hey, thank you very much, Freddie. Yeah, absolutely. So it was founded on February 8th, 2021, approximately 2 weeks after I retired from the FBI after 24 years. And we set up the center so that we can lead the way in protecting the elderly and their family members from predators who conduct elder financial abuse, because we want to help our nation's 56 million elders protect their life savings from financial predators.
Did you have a personal encounter with someone in your family being scammed or taken advantage of financially?
What I share with people is I have seen this crime through somebody that I knew. And once I saw that, I started digging into our national effort to combat this. And I felt that there was a gap that the center could fill. So that's what we're doing, is providing education, free education, through our website, which is endefa.org. And again, that's endefa.org. And we show the crime through the eyes of the predator. So right now we have over 20 cases on our convicted cases of financial predators on our website. So we invite people to go to that website, take a look at it, take a look at some of these cases, especially Scott Cohen, who was able to steal $300 million and target 13,000 veterans. Not a lot of people have heard of this case. So it's the cases like this that we want to highlight. And hey, if your listeners go to the website, if they like what they see, there's also a place to make a donation. Donations are always greatly appreciated, because we want to continue growing our center.
Right. You are a nonprofit organization. And there's something recently in the news involving a U.S. senator. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, thank you, Freddie. So last Wednesday, NBC News reported that U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein made an allegation of elder financial abuse. And according to the article, this is only an allegation and no one's been convicted or held liable. But it points to a bigger issue, Freddie. It shows that anyone can be a victim of elder financial abuse. So when I saw that article, it took me all the way back to the late Mickey Rooney, who testified before the Senate Aging Committee on March 2nd, 2011. And in that testimony, he explained that he was a victim of elder abuse, to include elder financial abuse. And this is what he told the Senate committee, and I quote, he said, "If elder abuse happened to me, Mickey Rooney, it can happen to anyone." So today, Freddie, I just want to reiterate Mr. Rooney's message, that elder financial abuse can truly happen to anyone. And Mr. Rooney was exactly right. Now, that was over a decade ago, but that's part of what the center is doing. We're re-echoing what Mr. Rooney shared, because that is very vital information that people need to understand.
Are there other examples of celebrities, people that we might know that we can point to as examples that says, unless you're vigilant, that it could happen to anyone?
Yeah, there sure are, Freddie. So since I started looking at the crime of elder financial abuse over a decade ago, I came up with other celebrities that made allegations of elder financial abuse. And these individuals are Casey Kasem, the former radio personality. Also, Stan Lee of Marvel Comics. And then finally, the family of the late Ernie Banks, who is the Chicago Cubs baseball great. So this has happened in the past. So again, it can truly happen to anyone. So a little bit of preparation, a little bit of awareness, and a little bit of education goes a long way in protecting yourself from these financial predators.
It sure can. So what can we do? I know we talk about this often, but I don't think we can talk about it enough. What are two or three things that we can do this weekend that can help us to protect not only ourselves, but our family members?
Yeah, absolutely. So what my main recommendation is for an elderly person to get together with a trusted and responsible family member and conduct an assessment on the vulnerability of that elder. Take a look at age. Take a look at isolation. Does the elderly person live far away from family and loved ones? Also, is the person a widow or widower? And is there a risk of dementia? Take these factors into consideration. Then a couple of other things that I really like to share is we've all heard it before. Do not click on links on either text or emails. Mm. I got to say it again today. That's very important. Then finally, telephone numbers. A lot of us have smartphones, and these numbers get passed around. So if an elderly person has had that number for a number of years, consider getting an additional telephone number and using that to share with only trusted and responsible members of your network. And that's the phone number that you use.
John, tell us how we can get more information about protecting ourselves.
Yeah, please visit our website. Again, it's endefa.org. Again, that's endefa.org. Please reach out to me through the website. Again, if you'd like to make a donation because we're a nonprofit, that'd be great. But Freddie, that's free information there. And spend 20 minutes on it. You'll be a little bit further ahead than the predators.
He's the founder and president for the Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse. And this is New Beginnings. It's New Beginnings, and it's time for a little fun on our weekend program. Here are four things that you probably didn't know yesterday. It's time to level up your IQ. In 2013, a 68-year-old Englishman discovered that he could no longer feel sadness after suffering a stroke. Number two, Coca-Cola was the first soft drink to be consumed in outer space. Number three, there are more possible move variations in the game of chess than there are atoms in the observable universe. And number four, the world's oldest known recipe is a beer recipe from ancient Sumeria dating back to around 1800 BCE. And the next time your boss sends an email at 10 p.m., ignore it. Science is on your side, too. Researchers at Lehigh University, Virginia Tech, and Colorado State found that checking work emails after hours not only increases employee anxiety and health problems, but also wreaks havoc on personal relationships and home life. So ignore that email. And a steady diet of sodas could hinder your ability to reproduce or even shorten your life. Researchers from the University of Utah gave mice a diet of 25% sugar, equivalent to 3 sodas per day in people, and found that males less likely to reproduce or defend their territory. Females had it worse, dying at double their normal rate. The mice weren't fatter and would have passed physicals despite the negative health impact. So the sugar's toxic damage is all under the hood. And it's wacky, but it's true. Police rescued a man being chased by a baby squirrel. German police rescued a man after he called for help, saying a baby squirrel wouldn't leave him alone. The man claimed he was being chased down the street by this tiny animal. Officers sent a patrol car out to investigate and arrived to find the chase was still on. But the drama ended suddenly when the squirrel, apparently exhausted by its exertions, laid down abruptly and fell asleep. Just for fun this week, we'll be right back.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi, everyone. And now joining us on New Beginnings is Kathy McClear. She is AARP's Minnesota State Director. And it's time now to talk about your money. How about if we focus on Social Security, Kathy?
Yeah, Social Security is such an important benefit. I mean, really, it's your money. You've earned it through a lifetime of hard work. And like most Americans, that money is really needed to help cover those living expenses and pay bills. I think the thing that sometimes folks forget is that Social Security was never meant to be the sole source of income in retirement. Yet 37% of Minnesotans age 65 and older rely on that monthly check for at least half of their income.
That's amazing. So when can you start collecting these benefits from the government?
Yeah. So again, this is your money. You've earned it through a lifetime of hard work. And if you ever look at your paycheck, it's that Social Security tax that comes out every time you get a paycheck. You can claim your Social Security benefits as early as age 62. Mm-hmm. However, the longer you wait to start collecting after you become eligible, up until the age 70, the larger your payments will be. And so full retirement age is 67, but you can claim as early as 62.
Wow. So does that mean you can still get these benefits while you're working?
Yeah, you absolutely can. So you can collect your Social Security payments while you're working. In fact, about 26% of Social Security recipients in 2023 are still working. Now, here's the caveat. If you are below that full retirement age of 67 and you earn more than a certain amount, those monthly payments will be temporarily reduced. But once you hit that full retirement age of 67, your payments will be increased to make up for any of those previous reductions.
We're talking with Kathy McClear. She's Minnesota State Director for AARP. So how much will a person receive from Social Security?
Yeah, so that really depends. Your Social Security income depends on a number of things, but the biggest thing is your income over your lifetime. And so the Social Security Administration takes your 35 highest earning years and calculates an inflation adjusted average, plugs that information into a formula, and that gets your basic benefit. AARP actually has a Social Security calculator, and you can find that at aarp.org. And just in that search bar, type in Social Security calculator, and it'll get you right there. And you can see exactly how much you will be getting when you reach that retirement age, whether you claim early at 62 or you reach your full retirement age of 67. Or you can also see how much more you would get each month by waiting until the age of 70.
So you continue, AARP, that is, continues fighting hard on behalf of its members to make sure that Social Security is there when we're ready to receive it.
Yeah. So as we said, as I said a little bit earlier, 37% of Minnesotans age 65 and older rely on that monthly paycheck. Mm-hmm. And it's an average of $1,700 a month. So not a lot to live on. But that makes up over half of the retirement income for about 37% of recipients. And we do know that if Congress does nothing in the next 10 years, Social Security could be cut by 20%, which is an average of $4,000 a year. And so that's why AARP is fighting to ensure that hardworking Americans who've paid into Social Security over their lifetime get the money that they've earned.
So for those who are ready to retire, how can they sign up to get these benefits, Kathy?
Yes, they can go to ssa.gov. And again, you can get more information on Social Security at aarp.org/MN.
Final question before we have to step away. Are these benefits taxable at the state level?
Yeah, so Minnesota is still one of 12 states that does tax Social Security income. However, in the last legislative session, we made some progress in eliminating those Social Security taxes for couples earning up to $100,000 a year and for singles earning $78,000 a year. We do now have some partial relief for earners in those categories.
All right. Do you have a final thought for us this weekend regarding these benefits from the federal government that you just mentioned that we've all worked so hard for?
Yeah, it is such an important piece of your overall retirement income. And it's really important to understand what those benefits are and when you can claim and how it fits into your overall plan. So it's really important to do your research even well ahead of retiring.
All right. She's Kathy McClear, the State Director for AARP Minnesota. We're talking about Social Security, and this is New Beginnings. Thank you for listening to New Beginnings, and it happened this week. In 1831, former slave Nat Turner led an insurrection against slavery in Virginia. In 1878, the American Bar Association was formed in New York by a group of lawyers, judges, and law professors. In 1911, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa was stolen from the Louvre Museum in Paris, France. It was recovered 2 years later. In 1922, Curly Lambeau and the Green Bay Football Club were awarded an NFL franchise. In 1931, New York Yankee slugger Babe Ruth belted his 600th home run. In 1950, the United Nations moved into their new headquarters in New York City. In 1959, Hawaii became the 50th state of the Union. And in 1987, the film Dirty Dancing opened across America. It happened this week. We'll be right back.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Worried about the current market volatility? Is your advisor telling you to hold on for dear life? Join us as we talk about how to spot the difference between gambling and investing. Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Label Sternbach. Who's he? Well, you know by now, he is the author of a couple of great books. One, Living with Financial Anxiety, and Authenticity. Label's been with us for quite some time. His website is yieldsforyou.com. Label, hello and welcome back, sir.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Unbelievable. And I just keep watching what's happening with our government. And I have a great question for you, which I think is a great question because it comes from our friend Brian. He wants to know, Label, how do you tell if you're gambling or investing?
That is a great question. That is a great question.
Okay.
Gambling versus investing. Well, Let's start with this, right? My dad firmly believed that, you know, in card counting and specifically blackjack, he was into every kind of strategy for beating the house at blackjack. And he would buy these, you know, systems and learn them and software and training himself to be able to do it. And the thing is that both gambling and investing, both of them can be investments and both of them can be gambling. We know people who make their livelihood gambling. They go to the casinos and they've got their system, whether it's a card counting, whether it's, you know, how they go up to the slot machines or whatever. And there are people who they consistently have winnings, so much so that the IRS has it as a standard box on, you know, your tax return of what your gambling winnings are. And you can offset your gambling gains with your gambling losses, right? Because people make a business out of it. So gambling, right, inherently by itself doesn't mean that it's bad. What it is it connotates the fact that you're allowing a certain amount of chance into your life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the differentiating factor is your investment strategy based on chance? Or is it something that is based on statistics and probability and, you know, and a certain amount of, you know, financial savviness, right? That isn't based on the whims of what the market does, right? It's, you know, for a fact that you, or you have a high probability that this is what the outcome is going to be. And if you don't have a high probability, then yeah, you're no different than gambling. And you need to make sure, right? I think that's the struggle, is making sure that what you're doing in your investment world and your financial world, that it's not a gamble, that it's not based on chance, it's not based on whim. It's based on facts and logic and statistics and probability.
It's interesting that you say that, because just based on Brian's question, the way it was structured, it seems as if, and I'm thinking that Brian is not an outlier, that a lot of people think that investing is in fact gambling, and it involves a whole lot of chance. But you are saying not so much, you don't think the chance is involved in investing.
For me, investing doesn't involve at all any amount of chance. I'm not a gambler. When I go to Vegas for conferences or whatever, I'll spend $100-$200 and play some blackjack or whatever. But that's entertainment, right? I'm not going there to make money. I'm not there to lose money, right? I'm there to have some fun. When it comes to investing, right, I don't look at the stock market as something where, you know, it's a lottery ticket and maybe I make money, maybe I don't make money. I know when I put money into the stock market that I have, you know, a better than even chance of making money. And not only that, but I know that it's pretty much guaranteed that over the long run, I'm going to make money. Now, the only way that I can have that certainty is by actually understanding what the stock market is, understanding what drives its growth and its value, right? And then making sure that I'm the right side of that equation. Because yes, it is very easy to go in there and for it to be a one-armed bandit where you just keep, you know, pulling that lever at buying this stock and buying that stock. And if there's no rhyme or reason, you can buy losers every single time, right? It is 100% possible to always have losers and to lose all your money and to, you know, go bankrupt in the stock market. However, if you are smart about it and you play the odds in your favor, not in favor of, you know, the houses where the casino, right? I mean, and that's an advantage that you have in the stock market that you don't have in a casino. The casino, the games are rigged against you, right? The house will always win over the long run. In the stock market, you could win over the long run. You can have the rules be in your favor. And I'm going to just lay this out for you, right? Mm-hmm. Is as long as the United States is a going concern, and I really don't care whether we're a dictatorship or not or a democracy, that's not important. What matters is that we're still a functioning economy and we have people who are living here and they're having babies, which means that they have an outlook for the future that's, you know, better than, you know, for the next generation than for the previous generation. As long as those three things are consistent, I know the stock market is going to continue to grow because it really is a product of that. And not just the United States, but the world as a whole, right? As long as people are having babies, as long as these babies are consuming products and goods created by the companies, those companies are going to be raising money from those same people, right? This is the beauty of our capitalist system. And that's going to drive the stock market's growth. So that to me, right, it is kind of a tailwind for it, right, where it's going to continue to increase. Now, my job, the difference between gambling and investing,
okay,
if I'm going in there and I'm trying to pick who the next Uber is, who the next Tesla is, who the next Facebook is, right, that's gambling. Because statistically speaking, you're not going to get that right. So we need to go in and we're betting on people. We're betting on the human race as a whole, not on individual companies. And when you start doing that and you start looking at the broader strokes of how things work and how the economies work, and, you know, that's where you really, it stops being gambling and it's investing.
So it seems as if we need to have our own mission statement or an investment policy going in.
You definitely need to have an investment policy, but just, you know, having a policy doesn't help you, right? You can write a mission statement, you can write an investment policy, but if it's based on, you know, the fact that you think that the sky is, you know, always going to, you know, it's purple, that's not going to do anything, right? It needs to be based on reality. It needs to be based on a probable outcome for the future, right? You need to have that statistical probability that this is what the future is going to look like. And then your investment policy statement, right, can help you. Your investment policy statement tells you, you know, this is what we need our money to do. This is how we're going to make it do it. This is the statistical probability of it happening. This is what's going to tell us when we're wrong, because there are going to be times that we're going to be wrong, right? Like when interest rates for the first time in 20 years start increasing to, above 2%. And when, you know, there's a global pandemic that makes every Western and developed nation go, shit, we can't rely on third world countries to produce our, you know, goods, when you have a, you know, a huge world power decide to go to war with a much smaller country. Those are all things that make you reconsider that the future is not going to be the same as the past, and you need to change your investment outlook. And that needs to be in your investment policy. That needs to be part of your plan. And you need to have a plan that's based on, you know, probable outcomes of the future.
That does make a lot of sense. I'm just wondering, are there some common mistakes that people make when it comes to investing for retirements and outlining that policy statement?
Yeah. So the common mistakes that I see, one is not having a plan at all, mm-hmm. right? So that's number one. Number two is, you know, being super simple in the plan, right? So some people are like, oh, well, I've got my 401k. I'm going to pick a target date fund and that's it, right? And that's perfectly okay, as long as you're saving up for retirement. The problem is that what you're really doing is you're outsourcing your responsibilities to someone else who doesn't know you, who doesn't care about you, excuse me, and really doesn't get impacted by whether their strategy works for you or not, right? So when creating that investment policy statement, you want to know that it's really a reflection of you, your needs, both, you know, your objective needs and your subjective needs, right? So what makes you feel safe? What will make you feel like retirement is worthwhile? As well as, you know, how much do you actually need to live, right? And that it's going to get you there. Because if it's not going to get you there, then what's the point?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so you need to have that written plan in, and it really needs to be personalized for you. And it needs to say in there, you know, these are the things that will cause us to reconsider it. And it needs to be stuff that you're okay with, because if something happens that's not on that list and causes you to reconsider it, you need to know, okay, this is what we do. This is the process that we follow, because that's what's going to keep you from gambling versus, you know, making smart decisions. And that's what life is really all about. Investing is being able to make the best decision for yourself and your loved ones.
I have a hard question for you. And just as those words come out of my mouth, I know nothing is difficult for you. So here it is. Vanguard is really big on low cost index funds. And I know a lot of people believe that financial advisors can just cost them money and they're better off without them. What are your thoughts on Vanguard?
On Vanguard or whether advisors are worth the fee you pay them?
I like the secondary question better.
All right. So Vanguard low index funds, I mean, if you're just going to own the index, then yes, own the lowest cost index, because, you know, you're saving yourself, you know, some money on fees. In terms of whether advisors are worth their fees, I think that's really dependent on the advisor and the client. On the situation, right? You don't always need a financial advisor. There's lots of people who I meet with who I'm like, listen, I think that you just need some subject matter expertise, right? You're facing this decision that you've never faced before, whether that's taking Social Security or that's doing Roth conversions or whatever. And you have this one decision that you need to get over. And once you're over that, you're doing pretty good on your own, right? So yeah, for some people, they don't need a financial advisor. What they really need is a consultant for a limited period of time, or someone who they can pick their brain. And the good news is that there's a whole world of financial advisors now who do that. They're really financial consultants. They're not, you know, financial advisors, not in the traditional sense. Having said that, right, there's also, you know, the spectrum of financial advisors when you think the traditional sense of that they do everything for you, they do financial planning for you, right? They're completely hands-on. And I think that, you know, assuming that the fee is reasonable, because there's definitely a certain point where the fee may not be reasonable, but assuming the fee is reasonable, generally speaking, most financial advisors deliver a lot more value than their cost. Now, if you at any point don't feel like you're getting the value out of your financial advisor that you're paying them, then you're probably paying them too much. But that is, statistically speaking, financial advisors generally provide value to their clients. Having said that, there's a lot of financial advisors out there who all they do is manage your investments. They don't talk to you. They don't help you with these questions. When you're feeling concerned or worried about the markets, my job as a financial advisor, probably 60% of the time, is just helping people feel comfortable with what's happening and making sure that their investments and their accounts are creating an experience that they're comfortable with. Because if they're not comfortable with the experience they're having, that's when we run into the situation where we're making poor decisions, where we're taking money out of the market at the wrong time, or where we start, you know, chasing returns on the other side of the spectrum, and we start taking on risks that are just kind of, you know, out of whack and don't help us achieve our goals. And so helping people, you know, just being that guiding hand a lot of times, you know, that helps people, you know, more than they can possibly pay, because just avoiding those bad decisions, you know, that has, you know, untold dividends. That pays untold dividends. And then you have other things like taxes, right? I mean, saving people 10-20% on taxes, mm-hmm. that's more than whatever I can do in the market, right? Like, so the 1% that people pay me, for the limited people I work with, you know, if I can't provide you with more than 1% of return, then I'm going to tell you that up front. That's first of all. But you should definitely be getting a lot more than that. And you should ask, what am I getting for it? And is it worth it?
Libo, we're literally out of time. Do you have a final thought? How can we get more information?
On my website, I've got under upcoming classes, if you scroll all the way to the bottom, there's a class that I have on there on how to choose a financial advisor. And if you've got questions about, you know, what should you look for an advisor? Is paying fees worth it? What are the different types of advisors? How do you go about picking one? Or if you have worries about the market, I would recommend that you take that class. I've got a free one, how to choose a financial advisor. And then I think I've got a $10 class on how to manage investments. And I take you through, you know, really understanding and building your own portfolio so that you can do it yourself. And then you can, at the end of the class, you can decide, hey, is this something I want to do? Or is this something I'm willing to pay someone to do it for me? And I even tell you how to do it, like with mutual funds, because that's a way of paying someone without paying them to manage your account.
Wow. Sounds like inside information. That's all the time we've got. The website, it's yields4u.com. Yields, the number 4, the letter U.com. If you'd like to get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, a free retirement and tax SWOT analysis, and they'll help you identify the strengths, weaknesses, threats, and opportunities in your portfolio. And this is New Beginnings. Thank you for joining us on New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell. And did you know that today is National Dog Day? Yeah, we're getting ready to celebrate all of our furry friends in the best ways possible. Can you believe that our furry friends have been with us for at least 14,000 years? Thank goodness for that, because what would we do without man's best friend? It's time to pull out all the cake and pictures of your pups and share your love for them with the world. National Dog Day was first established in 2004 by pet and family lifestyle advocate Colleen Page. The aim of promoting this day is to raise awareness about adopting these animals who are currently in rescue centers. It's an opportunity for all dogs to live a safe, happy, and abuse-free life. There is a dog out there for everyone, and whether you like big dogs or small dogs, every pup should be celebrated on National Dog Day. We'll be right back.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com. Scissors, clippers, styling and profiling. Information online at thestandardmn.net in Oakdale, Minnesota. In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
Paul, that great teacher that shaped so much of what we call Christianity, was addressing the early Christian community that was forming in Philippi, in what we now call Macedonia. And he wrote, at the end of his letter, after he had talked on like somebody I know, he said, to sum it all up, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these qualities. Our earliest prayer, used in our Unity tradition, begins with this simple line. But what does it mean to you? The invocation begins, I am now. I am now in the presence of pure being. Some of you are mouthing the words along with me. Charles said every Unity student should begin their day, their meditation, their prayer time, with those words. Why? It's bringing your attention around to this moment. I am now in the presence of pure being, embraced by God, if you will, however it's meaningful to you to word it. But to remind yourself, like that scripture, this is the day that God has made. This is the moment that God has given me. What am I going to do with it? Francine caught me. I've been given this gift. You've been given this gift. You have been given this hour, this moment. What are you going to do with it? When you know that, when you focus on that, you will know joy. You'll be filled with enthusiasm, another word for God flowing through us, Spirit moving and animating us. Here. Now, easy to say, challenging to practice. Really try with that little piece of paper just to see how many times you're catching yourself Monday, tomorrow, thinking about the week ahead. Or thinking about that service at Unity you had to sit through on Sunday. And forgetting to claim the day that God has made for you in that moment. So let's take a moment. Let's move into the silence. Father, Mother, God, life-giving, life-sustaining power. I am now immersed in your presence. In this moment, in your embrace. My body is healed because I see it aligned with the truth you created, the gift that you gave me. That is a healing pulse. Spirit of the living God, in this moment, you are all wisdom, guiding the clarity of my thinking, the warmth of my feeling, and the firmness and strength of my willing to act. Father, Mother, God, I am a song you are singing into life. I am your beautiful melody, unlike any other. I will allow the world to hear me. To hear your song that is me. This moment is our life. It is our love. It is our wisdom. It is our power. It is our substance. Because it is. Now, I recall a technique of our friend Marlene. If you're struggling with anything in this moment, are you okay now? How about now? Is everything okay now? We give thanks for the blessing of now. We give thanks for the blessing of presence between us. And let's close this reflection, if you want to join me, if you want to support me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Let's try it again. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Try that this week. Sing that. And if that doesn't bring you to this moment and make you aware of the omnipotent good of God embracing you, rooting for you, guiding you, reassuring you, empowering you. Only the now will do it.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Thanks for joining me, and here are today's words to the wise. Singing warms the heart. Today's words to the wise, singing warms the heart. In the symphony of life, remember the profound impact of song. Singing warms the heart and stirs emotion, bringing solace in times of sorrow and celebrating the heights of joy. Embrace the power of music to heal, the power of song to inspire, and to connect us with others. Whether it's a lullaby to soothe a restless soul or a melody of unity that transcends borders, let the power of song be a constant companion on your journey through life. Sing with passion and let the warmth of your heart resonate with the world around you. Today's words to the wise, singing warms the heart. If you'd like to learn more, just download the Freddie Bell Radio Show's app for more Words to the Wise. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.